Alan.
Candace.
How's it going?
Going good. It turns out we have a rival podcast.
Oh, we do.
We do. Apparently, this Envoy Recorded Radio says that we are their rival.
I didn't think they were a podcast, though.
I guess that's true. So that means we are the better podcast, then.
There you go.
Just by default. Well, welcome to the Envoy Performance Podcast. My name is Alan Dow.
I'm Candace Nichols.
And as a reminder, our email address is epp@envoyportfolio.com. And you can also like and subscribe us, because we all know that the podcast that is most liked and subscribed is the podcast that is the best podcast in the Envoy portfolio.
That's right. And while it's not technically a contest, we all, of course, know it is in reality a contest.
We'll pretend it's not a contest, but we would like to win. If there were to be a contest, we would like to win it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for episode 3. So our homework last time was to think about Don't Give a Damn Island.
That's
and
right.
One of those things you're sort of putting off to the side. I did a little homework on this. What about you?
I did. I've something I've been thinking about a lot, especially as things get busier. What are the things I'm just not going to spend my time worrying about? For me, mine's a little more personal than it is work-related. We own a car restoration shop. I think I've mentioned that before. We have some shop cats at the shop, and I spend way too much time worrying about these dang cats. And so I have made a conscious effort to, of course, make sure that they are fed, but not spend so much time worrying about what they are doing and where they are going. So that's mine. Sorry, cats. You're going on my Don't Give a Damn Island.
A little shop cat, yeah. Shop cat tough
poor,
love.
Poor shop cats.
Wow. Yeah.
I just don't have the mental energy anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. And you know, sometimes if you love something, you got to set it free. And yeah, that's great. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, and I think about this a lot, it's just how much news and media I consume. There's so much going on in the world, and it's such a ping pong type of thing. And so for me, it's really hunkering down. And I've started to say this to people that I work with, but, you know, I'm a doctor, I work in healthcare, and it's like, okay, let's put our head down. Let's take care of patients. Let's teach our students. And the swirl of things that can potentially affect healthcare is so much, but a lot of it has yet to trickle down to the front lines. It might, but I'm putting a lot of that on Don't Give a Damn Island. I got to, maybe I'll give a little bit of a damn, but not a huge damn.
Yeah. I think that's actually, it's a really interesting segue to some of the things we have been talking about with some of the leadership cohorts we've been talking to in the last few weeks. And that's really being intentional and specific about what has actually changed versus what's feeling like it's changed. And I think sometimes that constant like news consumption is so driven by fear and dread and this might happen. Okay, that hasn't happened yet. So how are we thinking about what we know is to be reality and what has changed versus what we think might be on the horizon? Certainly, we want to think about preparing for it, but managing what we can control and influencing what we can influence versus getting so down a rabbit hole of what could be and what might be and what we feel like might be on the horizon. I think that's a really healthy habit to start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I hope I'm not just putting my head in the sand, but I guess we'll see where this goes.
Yeah.
So you and I both had a chance to hear Richard Reeves, mm-hmm. who wrote a book called Of Boys and Men and talks about male loneliness. And I had a chance because you gave me your tickets to go to the Richmond Forum.
With Scott, actually. And I think they actually talked about this on ERR.
That's right. We mail bonded over that. And then he talked about it. And then you were able to watch it, which is great. Mm-hmm. So this idea of male loneliness, I just, since we hadn't seen each other since then, I wanted to get your thoughts on it. And as we're thinking about that and the place of work, where's your head at with that?
Yeah. And this is something I think we could spend an entire podcast series talking about, but it's something that I think is really worth paying attention to, especially as we think about it in terms of work. We already know that there is, there's a pay gap for women that is getting better, but it is not fixed. One of the things that was really interesting to me in hearing him talk was how wages have stagnated for men without college degrees. Women without college degrees, their pay has increased over the last 20 years. That really hasn't changed for men. And I think we really want to be a society where a rising tide lifts all boats. And so how are we thinking about making everybody successful? Because it's not really a zero-sum game with a handful of exceptions. You know, there's only so many senators, only so many representatives that can be in Congress. But when we look across the broader spectrum of our workforce, how do we make sure that everybody has a chance to be successful? And I've seen some things on social media lately where women have been saying, why should I care about male loneliness? We're seeing it manifest in violence. We're seeing it manifest in policies that are stripping away rights from other people. And I would actually argue that in a work setting, I think it's really important that we want to pay attention to it, because we do still have a workforce that is encompassed of different genders. It's not all dominated by one across the spectrum. And so how do we make sure, again, we're creating these environments where everybody has an opportunity to be successful and feel like they can contribute and feel like they're being paid equitably and can thrive?
Yeah. I love that. Just to put a finer point on a couple things there. So women make 84 cents on the dollar for men, and he showed these charts. And what was apparent in the charts is that what's happened to close that pay gap, which used to be in the 70s and maybe in the 60 cents on the dollar for women, is men are making less. It's not that women have made more. We've not raised the floor. We've actually increased wealth inequality, and people talk a lot about that. And so what happens is that men are making less, and so they've become closer to women. And so it's not that we don't have issues with women and equality that we have to fix and still work on. And he said this numerous times. But we've also now got these male issues that are really in this broader idea of some of the social transformation we've seen, which has to do with wealth inequality and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing that we have seen that he really hit on, and I hadn't thought about it quite like this, was we are quick in some instances to shut down talk that we don't agree with or that we see as questionable. This is something that we have been debating happening on college campuses, something we've been debating happening in the workforce. Not saying it's right or wrong, but what is happening is that sometimes people will question something that they see or question a belief that they have, and we aren't always making space to have a conversation about that. Not often at home, certainly not at work. And so what happens then, at least in the way he was sort of framing it up, is that if we aren't making spaces to at least have a conversation about what's on people's minds, people, and in this case, men may end up going to sort of the far extremes of the internet to find someone who is maybe reinforcing that belief. And we know that the way the algorithms are built, that then that content just begets more and more extreme versions of that content until we've got this increasing polarization and this increasing rabbit hole and this increasing sense of loneliness with men. And I have seen it not as much in real life, but certainly see it play out in some of the news stories that we hear. But I would be shocked if we didn't start seeing this manifest a little bit more at work if we can continue to go down this path.
Yeah, that's really complicated. So I have seen some of this in real life. So I have a 15-year-old son, as you know, and a 17-year-old daughter. And as part of my son growing up, it's normal for them to try on hats and sort of say, okay, I'm going to try to be this kind of person and that kind of person. And they enjoy when their parents react negatively to that, because it's like, oh, okay, look, I'm defining myself as my own person. That's normal development. And if they don't have male role models in life, which was one of the things that Richard Reeves really hit on, was the lack of male role models, and then they end up in the workplace and they are not able to express different viewpoints. And this is true of anybody, whether it's your male or female. But if you shut down people, then they will go and find places where at least they can try out those ideas other places. And you get into your point, the internet and its way of taking everything and making it extreme. And that's the stuff that gets, you know, popularized and seen on the internet, as we all know.
Yeah. And I think anytime we aren't creating a space where people can have a conversation in a way where differing points of view can be expressed freely and safely, I think we find ourselves in the situation, whether that's with gender identity or with political views or with anything like this. And, you know, for us, this is not just our children, this is our next generation of workers. Mm-hmm. And so how are we making sure that we are thinking about this, we're paying attention to it, we are creating spaces where people can have these differing conversations, whether that's, again, at work or whether that's just socially. And I know that's something you and I have talked about, like, how do we make sure that when we get friends together, we're able to have these different conversations too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually really important. There's two big learning theories. We're going to go down a little hole here for a second.
Yeah, do it.
So this guy named Skinner did these theories with operant conditioning, which is about rats getting shocked. And you've probably heard that sort of general story. And that it turns out if you get shocked, you don't want to, you know, do this. But if you don't get shocked, if you get, you know, sugar water instead, you're happy. And so that was the way that people thought about learning sort of in the middle of the 20th century. And then this guy came along named Albert Bandura and developed something called social learning theory, which is that instead of us learning from incentives, we learn by modeling those people around us.
Oh, interesting.
And I think about that a lot because it's really the framework for how we think about the cultures that we want to create in the workplace and at home and with our friends in terms of how people interact. And if we're not engaging in cultures that are leading to the type of people that we want, we end up sort of losing our tether for the world and how to interact.
Well, I think that's one of the things we've been talking about so much with social media. When people lose those in-person interactions and they're just interacting with who they see on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, and emulating those behaviors then that get virtual feedback, the likes, the comments, versus that real world interaction and feedback, I think that's exactly what we're talking about, like not creating these spaces for in-person social interaction and instead taking it all online, you are going to find the community that's reinforcing what you are already thinking, no matter kind of what those beliefs are, if they are mainstream or if they're super far right or super far left.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we become receptive people rather than interactive people. Mm-hmm. I've had a bunch of recent travels, as of you, but I've had some recent travels and interactions with people going to dinner and seeing friends. And it's fascinating. I can tell when I am interacting with someone how much time they have spent with other people lately.
Mm. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Well, so I went out to dinner with some friends a few weeks ago, and there were six of us. And I could tell that there were two people who did not interact a lot with other people because they just had an awkwardness to them. They didn't know how to have a conversation. They couldn't sort of stay in the flow. One of them I could tell had thought about some things that, oh, I want to talk about this, and just sort of brought it up in sort of random times. And so it was weird to feel that halting dynamic of interaction.
Hmm. What was the other one? You said that there were two people. One, was the other interaction sort of the same way?
Yeah. He very much tried to dominate the conversation and let us know how great things were, but he was telling stories that we'd all heard before and were sort of old stories. And, you know, remember this time 10 years ago, yada, 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 yada. And we, I think we all know these kinds of people.
Yeah. I wonder why that might have shown up in that way then. Do you think it was because these are people that you knew, they were comfortable bringing these things up, or do you think it was truly just that they were sort of rusty at these social interactions in this capacity? Because I'm assuming they are both professionals, they have real jobs, they have to interact with people to some degree, but in this session, in this setting that was truly social.
Yeah. I like the use of the word rusty. I think that's actually good, because I don't think they would unlearn this. But I think the way that work has changed, these people both are professionals, but they may not interact with people through their jobs because they're doing stuff virtually, or they're in a position where they are sort of supervising people. And so they don't have to really have a back and forth kind of interactive conversation. And it may actually get back to what we were just talking about people feeling open about talking about things in a real level and you know, being willing to, you know, say something that someone might not agree with. We've become so agreeable in some ways in the workplace that you end up losing that sort of, you know, back and forth like we're having. But yeah, I have to think more about that for sure.
Yeah. And I wonder too, because it sounds like you all have all been friends for a while, if they're sort of legacy relationships that might be guiding how some of these conversations work. Like, mm-hmm. one of the things you and I were talking about last week or a few days ago was kind of mixing things up in how you interact with people and changing the dynamics in a relationship that you already have. One of the things that we did last week, we were traveling for a leadership program that we do. And typically when we have this program, we are in the front of the room, we are leading discussions, we are having dialogue. It's very interactive, but we are leading the discussion. And we are in a space where we are instructing this session and we've got the curriculum all baked out. And one of the things that we intentionally decided to do this time was to go down a day early and actually go meet people where they were, especially if they weren't somewhere that was sort of central or convenient to the class that we were leading. And it made such a difference in getting to know people. These are people that we have interacted with over the course of at least six sessions. Oftentimes, we have talked with them between sessions and we have built up a good rapport, but actually going to where they were leaders and we were visitors and just completely changing the dynamic, I think really enabled us, at least I know it did for me, it really enabled me to have very different conversations with people than we would have had in class, not only because it was a different type of setting. We weren't just like talking about the curriculum, but getting to see what they did and hear them talk about what they did in that way and introducing us to members of their staff and hearing them tell that story and lead that social interaction in a different way. It was like playing an away game. Like, we weren't on our home turf anymore. We were getting a sense of what it was like for this person in a very different capacity. And I loved it, not only because we got to hear people, you know, really in their element, leading their teams, like being incredibly proud of the work that they did, but getting to see them and how maybe their normal day-to-day was and their normal interaction was versus when they're coming to this session sort of being very on. I think there is something to be said that is really powerful for getting people out of this relationship that we have structured and actually changing the dynamic to get to know them in a different way, because then it forces you to have a very different conversation.
Yeah. So I love that. I love calling it playing away game. I think that there's a tool in there, I think, of playing an away game. Scott has talked about with negotiation where the setting is of having things.
Absolutely.
And it's a sort of broader concept, this idea of playing an away game, mm-hmm. than that. But my sense is, you mentioned getting to know people. I think people often have a lot of pride in what they're doing, and you also get a sense of understanding the problems and the challenges that they're facing. And I don't know if you felt like you were in what levels you were feeling like you had a better understanding of the person.
Yeah. Yes. I'm gonna borrow one of EB's tools. And yes, and that I think that was very much part of it. I think another part of it was we carved out time and made it a very intentional visit. Mm-hmm. Like, we are intentionally changing up our routine because we want to come spend time with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really powerful. If someone knows that you are specifically coming to see them, not just like squeezing it in, or you're already out that way, so you're like making it an aside. I think that is like making sure people feel like you are giving them your time, mm-hmm. changes the dynamic of the conversation they're going to have with you too. So I think there is that element of pride and being able to say, like, look at all the cool stuff that we're doing here, but also you are intentionally making this time for me. And so I'm going to reciprocate that in the way that I am sharing my story and experience with you. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
It does. Yeah. So it's fortuitous that you're bringing this up today, because after this, I'm actually driving to South Hill, Virginia to visit the hospital there, because I have sort of new responsibility for the hospitalist down there. And it's an example of this in that going to see them. So it's a beautiful hospital, great folks that work there, but there's the challenges of working in a rural community where you just have less resources.
Yeah.
And this is my second visit. I went about a month ago, and I very much better understand the situation there.
Hmm.
Now it's going to be the majority of my day. I'm going to spend, you know, an hour each way driving there and then several hours meeting people. But to me, well worth it. And, you know, something I'm squeezing in today between other things that I have this morning and in the evening. But that I like that idea of playing an away game. I do think that maybe we misunderstand that as a leader sometimes about the value of going to visit someone that it may not be people that you supervise. Maybe it's a different unit that you can go see. And I don't know if you've had some experiences like that where you've gone, because you've had such a long professional life of doing all sorts of things where you've had to make these visits.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I, so yes, being very intentional about going to visit other offices that mm-hmm. we had, carving out time to meet people specifically, but also scheduling unstructured time. Mm-hmm. This is something else you and I have talked about. Like, how are you just around and present and visible, especially mm-hmm. if you're going somewhere, maybe not just to meet one person one-on-one, but to visit a different location or to see a client site where there may be multiple people that you want to spend time with. Baking in time to allow for those I hate to say ad hoc in this mm-hmm. case, but I think that's what it is. These yeah. like ad hoc interactions that just pop up.
Yeah.
There's something really powerful about that too, because again, you're getting a chance to see people in a totally different element than you normally would, and making time for that to make someone feel heard that you might not would have otherwise. You're not just going meeting to meeting to meeting. And I have done that with offsite visits before too. And that doesn't always present really well, because it just looks like you don't have time for anyone. You're just there for a meeting and then you're in and out. I think that's really interesting. This idea of scheduling is the key word here, that unstructured time for these personal interactions to just pop up.
Yeah. And it's funny that you had to say ad hoc interactions, because really they're just interactions.
Yeah,
right?
I know. But it's so weird.
Yeah. But we have to sort of structure unstructured,
yeah,
because you're exactly right. Life is so full with work and everything else everybody has on their plate, and so I love that of the structuring the unstructured. I'm a big fan of meetings with agendas. I'm also a big fan of sometimes just having a non-agended interaction, and I hate to call it a meeting because it feels like you should have a purpose.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah so this is great. So when you think about that unstructured time, because you don't have a goal that you're trying to achieve, we need to solve this problem. It sounds like it's probably more about listening. I heard you say that. Tell me about how you think about listening, because do you have to sort of turn your brain off then from the what's the problem we're trying to solve?
Yeah, this is something we spend a lot of our time talking about, because I think we as a society have lost a lot of our attention span and our ability to listen. See, before conversation about social media, I think that's a huge chunk of it. But I think oftentimes we have been primed during a conversation to be thinking about what our response is going to be versus actually listening to what someone is saying and responding in the moment. That takes, again, intentional practice. It's something that you just get rusty at. If you are so used to like thinking about what you're going to say next, sounds like maybe that's a little bit what was happening at this dinner you were mentioning before. And so there's ways that we encourage people to actually think about how they are listening. But I think there's also ways that people can strengthen their, attention span, maybe is how we could reference it. And one of the things that you mentioned that you do and that you're really intentionally trying to do more of is reading. Tell me a little bit more about how you are thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, so there's been some recent evidence that our brains are getting rewired by the way that we process information, and that looking at things in short clips and the scrolling of social media, even the way that our eyes move down a page, that has changed. Younger people, they read a different pattern than someone our age. And So I'm a big proponent of reading because it forces you to focus on what you're doing and not have that interaction that you get from the sort of richer things like, you know, all the other media that we engage with. I notice when I don't read for a while, I find it hard to get back to reading. Have you felt that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think people have talked about that. And so one of the things, maybe we can make this our homework for this week, is just trying to read in just like 10 minutes a day and try to do this. I sort of got back to reading recently, and I finished this book about, it's called Underworld by Susan Casey, and it's about the deep ocean, the very, very deep ocean that we don't know a lot about, and the exploration that's been going on there, that we've actually done a lot of impressive advances in it over the past 10 years. And nothing to do with work or anything or personal development, but it gave me just sort of this fantastical way to kind of get away from things. And I do think doing that kind of thing helps me think more deeply and gives me that muscle memory of how to use my brain so that then I can look at a problem and think more deeply about it. And I'm not just bouncing from thing to thing to thing, which, you know, I think that's also an important skill in the modern workplace. But I also think that deep thinking, we hear again and again that people are struggling with finding time and the wherewithal to do the deep thinking.
Do you find that fiction, nonfiction, does it matter for you?
It doesn't matter for me yet. I've read both. I will say I've had more success in finishing nonfiction.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know. That might be me. I'm a middle-aged man. I like nonfiction. You know? Or it may be that it has something to just do with what I've picked and whatnot.
Okay. So I think that's my homework for this week. I'm going to carve out time to read 10 minutes a day. Are you saying an actual book, not an ebook, not a news article on your computer, but an actual physical book?
So I don't know the answer to that. I do think that reading I like tangible books. I think an ebook probably counts. I'm not sure that a magazine article counts, and because they're just written in a different style. Like you need something that has a longer time course in terms of the story unfolding. So, and again, this is just me trying to understand the evidence that's a little patchy out there, but it does seem like it will matter differently for thinking.
Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing you say is that stack of books that I have had on my nightstand for the last 10 years probably should be cracked open.
Yeah, it might be
this time.
Yeah. So okay. So let's recap. So the three things we're going to take away. So we're gonna each try to read. So we'll do that for homework and come back from that. This idea of away games. I love that. And so I'm going to think about also how I can play some away games. I guess I'm already doing that. So
yeah, sounds like you're doing it today.
Yeah. But I think that concept is really important. And maybe us and our listeners can think about this idea of away games, and then this unstructured time idea.
Yeah.
And I do not have unstructured time planned on my visit today, but maybe I'm going to see if I can make some, because I do think that social aspect is important. And to get back to Richard Reeves and Albert Bandura, creating that culture where people are learning from each other, willing to disagree, and willing to sort of have those conversations helps us all become better people, I think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am traveling to the West Coast this afternoon with our colleague Ace.
Oh my goodness.
Tomorrow afternoon, we actually have a big chunk of time. So I happen to have some former colleagues in San Francisco, which is where we're going. So I might see if I can use some of that unstructured time just to reach out and reconnect with a handful of them.
Yeah.
And introduce them to Ace, because I mean, really, who, even though he's on a rival podcast, who doesn't want to meet Ace?
Well, who doesn't want to meet Ace? So, all right. Well, great talking with you.
You too. And stay tuned to hear what our books are. I'm really anxious to hear where you might be exploring next.
And if you want to email us, it's epp@envoyportfolio.com. Like, subscribe, because we want to be better than our rival podcast.
That's right. We'll see you next time.